I do believe there are more people out there right now who simply want honesty than ever before. You had a time where honesty got you ripped on message boards and people trying to get you fired from other jobs. That was what honesty did in 2007. They would love to have the honesty that we had in 2007 now. The show is best when the two people, the three people, can put a producer, the one person, is doing the show that they know how to do best. Everything's changed by the way we handle Nebraska football, right? We cover Nebraska football for years as if they were Alabama. Well, they're nowhere near Alabama. They're not Vanderbilt. I mean, they're bad. They're Kansas, right? So that's changing in the way local sports are being done. You can't do Nebraska football or Nebraska sports the way you were doing it before.
This is Watch the Media. I'm John Schrader. We spend our time here talking with people in the media about how it works and why. Michael Sevier has been a big part of the sports media scene in Omaha for a couple of decades now. Host of a popular radio show on 1620 The Zone, Unsportsmanlike Conduct was the name of it, and hosted a show and wrote for the Omaha World Herald, and then back on 1620 The Zone for the last 2.5 years as the co-host of the 6 to 10 a.m. slot with Damon Benning. At the end of 2021, Sevier stepped aside. I was curious about why he got out of the business and why now. He answers those questions and a whole lot more on this episode of Watch the Media. Well, this is the beginning of the next chapter of the Michael Sevier story, and I am curious to learn what the next chapter is of the Michael Sevier story, and he's with us now to tell us about that. Michael, how are you?
Good, John. I appreciate it. I'm curious as well. My wife's curious as well, too, what the next chapter is at this point. So we're all curious what the next part's going to be. As of right now, don't know.
The important thing is there will be a next chapter, right?
Well, I hope so. Yeah. I mean, I'm 52, so I don't think I'm ready for retirement yet, or allowed to even. But so there's got to be something else there, and something I've been thinking about for last time they had talked to you. You did a piece where you had to send a bunch of information in about mm-hmm. the pandemic and how sports were affecting your life, and I'd even talked to you about that then, saying that this was something that I had been thinking a lot about and getting out of that and trying to do something else and starting a new career. So it's something I've been thinking about and working on for a long time.
So for the record, you have left your morning gig at 1620 The Zone. And if mm-hmm. I have history correct here, this is the second time around you've been at 1620 The Zone, right? So yeah, you leave your 6 to 10 a.m. a bit. Mm-hmm. And so what precipitated that decision?
Oh, man, there's so many things to it. I can go back to the pandemic, where, you know, we didn't have any sports, and, you know, that wasn't a bad thing for me. I was fine not watching sports or having to follow it. I actually kind of enjoyed the show even more during those months when we didn't have sports. It was just fun. You know, we were talking about a lot of other things, and I've got to the point now where the older you get, the more favorite sports drop off. You know, I was a guy who loved tennis growing up and watched a ton of tennis along with football, basketball, and everything else. And I rarely ever watch tennis anymore. You know, it's not something I watch anymore. I watched a lot of NBA growing up. Unless it's the Sixers, on a rare occasion, I don't even watch that much anymore. So I was following stuff and talking about things that I really didn't have a huge interest in anymore, but it was a job. And so I was doing the job. A friend of mine last summer actually passed away too. And that I thought a lot about when he passed away, the things people said about him at the wake and the difference he made in a lot of people's lives. And especially at his job. And I thought a lot about it afterwards. And I don't know how much of a difference over the course of these 26 years of doing media that I've made. So I don't know, that's something I've thought about a lot too, wanting to maybe be able to help people out, make a difference in some way. I don't know. There's been a lot of things leading to this end of the year process that lasted, I'd probably say, probably a year.
So it sounds like you might be getting out of the media altogether.
Oh yeah, that was the plan.
Yeah,
that's been the plan all along. I put that up on LinkedIn. Oh man, I was like 6 months ago saying, hey, I was looking for something else to get out of the business. And then I had to take it down because the folks over at The Zone didn't want it up there yet until the end of the year. And so, yeah, I've been, that's always been the plan. I was, whether it's, you know, teaching was something that I thought I was very interested in. There's PR, there's some marketing stuff that I'm interested in. There's some production behind the scenes stuff, you know, I'd love to do. There's a extra job in Papillion that I would love to do. It's kind of a promotions person for the city where you do stories about the city and, you know, you write them, you produce them, that kind of thing. I would love to do something like that. That would be something I would enjoy. But yeah, in terms of front facing, that's not something I'm overly interested in anymore at this point. Unless I can't find anything else and the only thing I can do in life is doing that, then maybe that's something I go back to. But right now that's not the case, hopefully.
Yeah. So you're going to give up your TV, your football TV gig too?
Well, as of right now, I'm still doing Big Red Wrap Up. That was the goal. We talked about that. Like I said, when I first initially started discussing what I was going to do, the producer, Gavin, said, well, would you want to keep doing, you know, Big Red Wrap Up? And I said, I love doing Big Red Wrap Up. Sure, I would keep doing it if he wanted me to. And as of right now, I am. The next show is second week of February, talking about this recruiting class for Nebraska football. And so, yeah, I love doing that. It's fun. It's enjoyable. It's an hour a week. I go there, spend an hour and a half, 2 hours there and knock that out. And it's fun. And, you know, my wife's family can watch it back in Beatrice or wherever they are. And it's kind of cool. So, yeah, I plan on keep doing that.
So at the risk of following up that with the, yes, I'm still doing the Big Red thing. Do you ever get tired of talking about Nebraska football? I mean, you had to do that a lot on the radio. Do you ever think that maybe this is too much?
No, actually, if that was the only thing we talked about, that'd be fine with me. I love talking football and Nebraska football. And I mean, it's funny because we always joke, you talk about it 20 hours with crossover, 25 hours a week, right? Football, sports in general, most of it's Nebraska. But then you got to remember, you're talking about it with everyone you run into over the course of a day. And literally it happens constantly. I went to take the dog to the vet yesterday, and the main vet there is a Kansas State grad, but follows Nebraska football, happens to be a Saints fan, which is weird. But we had an hour where I'm there with the dog doing stuff, and he's checking in and going, how you think Adrian Martinez is going to do at Kansas State? And you think Nebraska is going to get a portal quarterback? I mean, it's a conversation that you're having constantly with people about Nebraska football, whether it's the grocery store or the vet's office. So no, I enjoy talking about Nebraska football.
So what then is it that you think the pandemic either exacerbated or moved up the time frame? Or, I mean, I think the pandemic, I mean, I think this is not a genius statement at all. The pandemic has forced all of us to be more introspective. I think it's forced all of us to look around and see what's important. I mean, look at the job numbers, like 4 million people quit their jobs in the last several weeks, right?
Since November. Yeah. Yeah.
People are just doing other things because they've reevaluated. Right. What is it about that forced us to do that? If you could share.
I think for me, more than anything else, it was seeing the other things that were out there. I mean, just sitting down and binging a show with your wife or your kids or something like that was something different. I really didn't have the time to do or even thought about having the time to do. And then you did something like that. It was going on the walks. It was going on trips. It was just doing other things besides that same schedule. The great thing about, I always compare sports to church in a way, because, you know, church is structured. I'm Catholic, so church is very structured. And you did the exact same thing every single day of the year, whether it was Advent or it was Lent or it was Pentecost. It was exactly the same thing. Sports are the same way, right? We know that end of August, football season starts. We know that in the beginning of February, football season ends. We know when college basketball, everything is this structure. Well, when that was taken away, I think a lot of people looked and go, well, why am I following this structure of this thing that isn't here now? You know, and then you start finding something else to fill that structure. I think that's what happened with a lot of people who had those service industry jobs. You know, they were fine doing the service industry jobs. They liked them. But when they realized they weren't there, then they were like, well, you know what? Maybe I'll go back to school and try something else. Or maybe I'll try a different kind of job. And then all of a sudden, they liked those. And then our service industry jobs came back and there was no one to work them. Right. So I think it's just the opportunity out there to do something different, to get out of the standard calendar year of what we always were doing before. And all of a sudden that changed. And for me, it was, you know, I was doing a show that I enjoyed. Don't get me wrong. It was easy. And this is really dumb. I mean, to say right now, I've said it out loud a few times to people. It was a really easy job. And I'm looking for something that actually is challenging. I can roll out of the rack, produce a radio show, host a radio show with someone or without somebody, any day of the week, three times on Sunday, right? It's just easy. And I was doing it every day, and I wasn't really getting any fulfillment out of it at all, besides the fact that, you know, you get paid. And then my co-host, you know, Damon and I we're friends. You know, but I don't think actually work together that well in certain ways. We do things differently in a lot of ways. And so a lot of that stuff is a part of it. You know, it's just trying to figure out the best balance for yourself. And it wasn't necessarily a good balance. You know, we watch a lot of Star Wars in this house, and you gotta find balance, right? And trying to do that now. And right now it's more nervousness than it is balance.
He's Michael Sevierre, and I'm John Schrader, and this is Watch the Media. At the turn of the year, Michael left his job as the morning drive time host at NRG station 1620 The Zone in Omaha.
So the journalist in me demands that I follow up that question, and that is, yeah. What was it that wasn't working between the two of you? How was it not in balance?
Well, there's like silly things. We do things differently. I believe the greatest question is a one-worded question. You know, it's why, you know. Damon doesn't do it that way. Damon asks a two-minute question. That's silly, but that drives me nuts, right? To the point where, like, I get texts from people in the middle of, like, a question going, you love this kind of thing, you know, that kind of thing like that. And so that's like one of the things that would drive me nuts. When you do interviews with people, I'd rather not interrupt them. I try not to. Unless there's a mistake or something happens, you have to. But that's not his interviewing strategy, is to jump in and do it that way. That's not the way I think of it, you know? And so that was just something that wasn't easy for me. It's something that we did for 2.5 years. And I had done in the past with him filling in and stuff. But that's just not what I wanted, you know, out of a show. And I think part of it that hurt me was doing that 5 years at the World Herald by myself and being able to structure the show the way I wanted it to go and be able to do it the way I think it's best done. And then now you're sharing with someone else, which is fine. And matter of fact, it makes the show easier, you know, doing it with two people is much easier than doing a show by themselves. But at the same time, it wasn't balanced. He is great at what he does, can work with anybody. One of my best attributes is I can work with anybody. But at the same time, it just wasn't a show that I personally was enjoying, you know?
Yeah. And I assume that these are conversations that you'd had with each other, with management, with producers. This is not something that just suddenly, this is not exactly what I want to do. I assume that conversations went on.
We had decade long conversation about this. You know, again, we've done shows together, on and off since 2006, I'd say. You know, we did a lot of College World Series stuff together. And so, yeah, we've had the discussion. Did we ever sit down and actually talk about the problems of the show? Oh, no. He's a guy, I'm a guy, we didn't talk. No. We worked around it. We yelled at each other. We didn't speak to each other for, you know, periods of time. But, you know, I mean, he can't change who he is as much as I can't necessarily change who I am. And so that's just the way it was going to be. It wasn't going to, and then, and I said this to him, him changing wasn't going to make the show better, in my opinion. Him doing, and I've always said this, and Kevin and I talked about this a lot back in the day when we were trying to figure out the show we were doing, right? Entertainment show, you're doing a show essentially of the things you like, and hopefully people like to hear the things you like, right? Whether it be food or movies or sports or whatever. The show is best when the two people, the three people, if you can put a producer, the one person, is doing the show that they know how to do best. If you're trying to change somebody, and we've seen this, ESPN Radio has done all these different groupings where they put people together and it just didn't work because you had people that were trying to change the way they did things to fit with the group. That's not the way sports radio works. You have to be yourself, do what you do. People either love it or hate it, or somewhere in between. Most times they love it or hate it. And that's the way it works. So him changing wouldn't have helped. It wouldn't. It would just, because that's not the way he does the show. So it, you know, it's a series of things that led to this point. Again, I want to do something. I'm 52 years old. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do something differently. This is the time to do. I talked to the guy who is the CEO of Elkhorn Athletic Association, and he was 49 or 48 or something, and had been a bank CEO, and had, you know, done all this investment banking and worked all over the world and all this stuff. And he was like, one day he just thought, you know what, I want to do something else. I'm gonna be 50. I want to try something else, and left that world for the nonprofit world of athletic sports or youth sports, which is completely different, you know, from what he was doing. Based off of just wanting to do something different. So that kind of spoke to me when he told me about that as well. So, you know, if I'm going to do something, it seemed like this would be the time to do it.
Well, I was almost 50 when I went back to college and mm-hmm. Got another degree, and then started dabbling in the teaching business. And so the third act, I suppose, of my career started in that decade. So, you know, it's never too late, as my wife always reminds me, it's never too late to be what you were meant to be. And mm-hmm. So there you go. That isn't to say, though, that you're down on the business of media, that you're down on the way it's done, that it has evolved into something that is unworkable. Is that correct?
No, I'm definitely not. I mean, if you follow me on any social media platform, I'm very excited about The Zone and what they're doing. I think Gary and Damon are going to do a great job. They did a great job before that together. I think it'll be great. I'm extremely excited about Connor Happer. I think Connor, it's funny because the pool you're in, or the pond or the lake or the river, whatever you're in, is fine for your size, right? Right. You take a fish out of this small pond and you put them in a really big pond, the fish gets bigger. I think that's Connor Happer. He was in Lincoln and fine. 93.7 is fine. It's for him. That was great. But I think at The Zone in Omaha, I think Connor's going to be a star. He does everything well. He's a play-by-play guy, does PA for Nebraska Women's Basketball. He's got really good creative thoughts when it comes to sports talk. I think he's going to be great. No, I think the business is fine. It's constantly evolving. I still think it needs more diversity. I love the fact that you look around this part of the state, you see more women getting gigs. You see more minorities coming in to the business in some places in Nebraska, which we didn't see for forever. So I think it's growing and it's doing well. I think it's morphing because we were going from go back when I started in 2004. Yeah, Nebraska hadn't had a whole lot of success football-wise since, 97, 99, 2001 played for a national championship. It had been 3 years since then. It'd be a non-bowl year in 2004. Everything's changed by the way we handle Nebraska football, right? We cover Nebraska football for years as if they were Alabama. Well, they're nowhere near Alabama. They're not Vanderbilt at this point. I mean, they're bad. They're Kansas, right? So that's changing in the way local sports are being done. You can't do Nebraska football or Nebraska sports the way you were doing it before. It's impossible. You have to be able to morph into fix it, strategy for fixing it. That doesn't work. Starting over reminds me when I was an education reporter in Albuquerque. You tried one system to fix the education system. It didn't work. Oh, that's fine. Scrap it. Let's try something else. Let's privatize it. Oh, that didn't work. Let's do this. You know, so that's kind of what covering Nebraska football is right now. It's different and it's morphing, but it's still covering this the number one sport, the number one business in the state.
So I'm curious about that. Are the media people driving that, or is the audience helping to drive that? Let's not spend 100% of our time doing this. Let's look at it more honestly. Let's look at it more independently. Let's not be all fanboys and fangirls when it comes to Nebraska. Is the consumer with you on this? Is the consumer helping to lead this parade a little bit?
Well, it depends on the show. It depends on the audience. For example, at the Zone, when I was there, Damon and I would say in the morning were, I wouldn't call us negative, right? Questioned, you complained, you did those sort of things. But at the same time, Damon's a former player. And so he'd always try to find the bright side, right? He's always on the sunny side of the street, trying to, is doing his best. Gary had a different job, right? As someone who was by himself, who covers a lot of UNO, who works for UNO, has a little bit of different method on the way he handled it. He went to Nebraska, he's covered Nebraska during the glory years. Now he handles a little bit different, right? The afternoon show, those guys are completely different. They're talking about the majority of the stuff that's bad. They're saying that you should have fired Scott Frost. They're out there on the other side of it. Not purposefully, not trying to be opposite of the morning or the noon show. That's just who those guys are. So the fans or the listeners who are on that side, listen to that. At least until it gets too much and they turn it off or whatever. The people who are for, let me find all the solutions and positivity, they're over listening to a different show. And so it all depends on your audience and the way you do your show, on how you handle it and how it's handled. I do believe there are more people out there right now who simply want honesty than ever before. You had a time where honesty got you ripped on message boards and people trying to get you fired from other jobs. And that was what honesty did in 2007. They would love to have the honesty that we had in 2007 now, right? They want that. They want to hear, why isn't this working? How is this not working? What needs to be done? And tell us the truth now. And then there's the group of people who don't want that. They're the ones who complain and say, oh, that I can't listen to that show. They're too negative. All they talk about is all the problems. And you're like, well, what's not the problem? Everything's a problem, right? So it all depends on how you do your show, who wants to listen to you. And that's why you have 16 hours of sports talk to listen to.
Yeah.
You pick and choose. And the greatest thing that happened to sports talk and the worst thing that happened to sports talk is podcasting, right? Mm-hmm. For you don't have to listen live. When you were listening to Kevin and I, or even John and I, you had to listen live. Now you don't. You just pick it up and then you go through the list and you go, oh, that segment one was about, I don't know. And you just pick the ones you want. And so you listen just what you want to listen to. So you can actually just organize your own listening into what you want to hear, which I don't think is totally great. That's like building that wall yourself on Twitter, just follow people who agree with you. That's not a good thing. I don't think it's a good thing just listening to just the things you agree with on a podcast list either, but that's where we're going.
You said the best and the worst of it is the podcasting. The best of it, of course, is if you can't listen at 6 o'clock in the morning or you're driving the kids to school, but they don't want to listen to what you're listening to, then you can go back and listen to your favorite program in the morning. So what's the worst of it then? Is that you're not encouraging people to... Well, I'll just ask you, what's the worst of it? Because one thing that drives me nuts about interviewers is answering their own questions. So yeah, what's the worst?
Yeah. So the worst of it is that you lose the immediacy. You lose when the people are talking about it and the context of what they've been talking about in a whole show, you're listening to an 8-minute segment or a 10-minute segment. And a lot of things get taken out of context because you're not listening to a whole show. You also lose, like I said, the immediacy of it when it was important, when it was happening. Now you're listening to it 12 hours, 24 hours later, and it doesn't have the same impact. And then I think you also have where you build a flow of a 4-hour show or a 5-hour show or a 3-hour show. And by just grabbing from different parts of it, I think you lose what the flow of the show was. So the best thing is that everybody can listen whenever they want to listen. That's awesome. That's what we always wanted. Sometimes though, when you're listening, you're not getting the context of what was being done or what being said or what happening in the show. And it's kind of weird because there's some people like that. There are some people that just want that and are very happy. I remember when we started the show over at the World Herald, initially because of bandwidth and everything else, we were doing full hour podcasts, right? So here was your whole hour. People were mad. I need segments. I need it broken in. I need to be able, because that way they can download the ones they want. It also allows them to be able to, usually in Omaha, we're in the car, what, 15, 20 minutes at a time. Perfect podcast length. Full hour, not the same, you have to stop and start it. So people want not just podcasts. They want it to be broken down into their listening drive. You know, for some people, that's Bill Simmons, an hour and 30 minutes or 2 hours. For most people, it's 8 to 16 minutes.
I think that most people don't understand, and again, we've sort of joked about this, the audience doesn't care what our problems are, and the last thing we should do is ever tell the audience what our problems are, but this isn't really a problem. I think what a lot of people don't understand is the art of making an hour sing, an art of making 4 consecutive hours work, and the ebbs and the flows and the ups right. and the downs, and how long do you, there's something in your brain, there's a clock in your brain mm-hmm. that says, we've talked about this a little bit too long, we've got to go on to something else, right? So mm-hmm. I think there is an art to that, isn't there? And that's one of the things that makes the great radio people great.
The funny thing about when you think it's done is often judged by the listener. You may think you've done everything you can, but you get 2 more phone calls that extend it. And then somebody else joined and they heard those 2 phone calls. They missed the first 15 minutes of it. Now they're in it too. So maybe it's going an extra segment than you'd think it would. But yeah, knowing when you have exhausted a topic. It's funny because one of the best ever is Jim Rome, right? Jim Rome would bury a topic. He would dig it up. He would bury it again and do that over the course of an entire show. His listeners loved it, and he knew his listeners dropped in and out. That's fine if you want to do it that way. We got 4 hours. I want to get as much into the 4 hours as I possibly can. I'm going to try to force everything into it because I think we need to cover all of this before it's done. Because if you don't cover it by 10, next morning at 6 a.m., a lot of times it's not topical anymore. You don't even need to talk about it anymore. So I try to get everything in. Now, there's times where that doesn't happen, where Kobe Bryant passes away. The whole show is Kobe Bryant, bad and good. You know, January 6th happens. That's the show, right? So I try to get as much as we can, but you also have to have the feel of where is this show going today? And maybe it's a chance where we're just going to throw everything out the window and we're just going with this, which happens. I'd say probably happens in Omaha during a football year, probably 15, 16 days out of the month. That happens mm-hmm. where something crazy happens. And we've had stretches where, you know, AD gets fired and bad loss happens. AD gets fired. Coach gets fired. Hiring. All those shows are now just that. And that's the only thing you're talking about for 4 hours.
You mentioned a minute ago that the guys in the afternoon, I think especially Josh Peterson, has been on the mm-hmm. Frost Has to Go train for a while now. Where did you check in on that? And because of the Big Red wrap-up show, do you have to be careful about your opinions about that because of the relationship with the university show?
Second answer, it has never affected me. I have been told before by people that they got an email about something I said on the radio about Nebraska. The way I try to cover football, and I've been trying to do it this way since I got into the business, is I try to cover it as analytically as possible. If A and B equals C, that's my answer. I'm not going to go and try to say, well, you know, C's the answer, but, you know, my wife doesn't like this about, you know, Scott Frost, or my uncle doesn't like this about Fred Hoiberg, so that's going to skew. No. That's C. That's the answer. That's how I do it. And so I always fall back on that. So if somebody would complain about something I said in terms of the job of Big Red Wrap Up, I would just go, all I do is the facts. I'm not giving you anything but facts. So that's fine with that. Going back to it, and Josh is 29. I don't think Josh is 30 yet.
I think he's early 30s.
Is he that early? Is that,
I think so.
It's funny. Everybody I meet, they're always the age I met him. So he was an intern coming out of high school when I first met him. And then, of course, he was in college and he was our producer. But if I was his age, I'd be yelling about that every single day of my show, that he needed to be fired. because there is nothing, as our AD said, there is no empirical evidence that shows us this should work, right? And that's all Josh is saying. There is no empirical evidence whatsoever that this is going to work. And so if I was his age, I'd be saying the exact same thing. But throw 25 more years on me and on my career, and I understand that there are some times where you look at something and you say to yourself, that person needs another year, or this experiment needs to go on for a little bit longer, because it allows you to fire without having the Frank Sewell situation. If Frank was fired in 2005, or say they don't fire him in 2003, he comes back in 2004 and he goes 7-4, 7-5, they're not very good, and you fire him the next year, nobody's losing their mind, right? Because you gave him the extra year. This is the Frank Sewell situation. You give Scott Frost one more year of rope. And then he either pulls himself out of the quicksand or he hangs himself. That's it. So as someone who now has been following this as long as I have, I know that there's no reason in the world to not let him have another year. You took the money back. You cut down the fee it's going to cost to pay him off if you fire him. You save the university money. And you gave everyone who would have been mad at the university because they fired Scott Frost too soon the chance to watch one more year.
And I'm pretty sure that Trev Alberts, in a conversation with Frost, just, I don't know Alberts, but just watching him from outside, he had this conversation with Frost privately and said, look, this is what you've got to do. You know, you're smart. Mm-hmm. you're a smart guy. This is what's going to have to happen. And if it doesn't, that's it.
You know, Trev walked into a mess. I mean, mm-hmm. Here's the best and worst thing about working in local radio, even writing for a newspaper, is you know so much stuff. And it's hard to not say it all, because you have to be able to weigh what a source says, what you know is innuendo, what you know because of something else. You have to be able to weigh all of that. And you can put some of it out there, but you know where you can go. I can tell you honestly, based off of people who I know at the university who have been there for a while, when Trev Alberts got there, he was like, why didn't anybody tell me it was this bad, right? Why didn't anybody tell me it was this bad? Well, if people want to hire you, they're not going to tell you how bad things are. They're going to tell you all the positives. And that's what he got. And within a couple of weeks of being there, he found out about that little stupid investigation from the NCAA, which is not a big deal. It's a secondary violation. It's not a big deal. He found out about that. He found out about how dysfunctional the football program was from offense to defense. He found out how dysfunctional the North Stadium was. He found out how dysfunctional the lack of plans were. He found out that, you know, again, I'm a guy who covered education for a long time. You give a master and a capital plan for everything. One is building, the other is funding. They had no plan for either at the University of Nebraska, a $1 billion industry. He walked into that and he just threw his hands up and go, how is this possible? So that's what Trev got. The football stuff's important. He can put Scott Frost on the back burner for a year, get all the other stuff straightened out, the mess, clean that up. And then next year, come November, December, whatever, you can then make that decision.
Well, and clearly, I think the university administration did a good job in hiring a guy who has the gravitas, has mm-hmm. the history, has the name, who can make those difficult decisions and give them some cover, frankly, and can make these decisions and seem to make them autonomously, and probably will, and have the credibility to do that.
Yeah, he's done. He's made. He has at no point in his career is he ever going to have to do something as tough as eliminating two sports programs mm-hmm. at a university, one of which won a national championship 2 days before it. He will never have to do anything that difficult. Firing Scott Frost won't be as difficult as that. It won't.
I agree.
As a matter of fact, when Scott Frost gets fired, you're going to go, well, he needs to get fired. No one is going to go, man, that wrestling program that was winning back-to-back Division II championships should have been ended. You know, that's never going to happen. So, yeah, he's got the ability as a former football guy. He's got the ability as an administrator for a decade at a university that was in a bigger mess than the University of Nebraska is when he got there at Omaha. And he fixed all that. You drive around campus, walk down Center Street, go past the Exarvin Village. I remember standing there the day they said for the $168 million project to fix all of that. I remember that thinking, ooh, how are they going to fund this? How's this going to happen? Now it's incredible. You know, I mean, Baxter Arena, I mean, it's there and Exarvin's done and all the Scott Center's done and they have all these dorm rooms now and they're no longer a commuter college. All this, the Division I, all this is because Trev Albert said, all right, you want me to do it? Here you go. Be mad at me if you want, but I'm getting this done. And hopefully at Nebraska, the same thing will happen. Now, there's a lot more layers at Nebraska, you know that, to doing things. But I think he's got as much, they've given him enough of the power to be able to do it.
I'm John Schrader. This is Watch the Media. We're joined by Omaha media veteran Michael Sevier, who just left his morning drive time hosting slot at 1620 The Zone.
You mentioned honesty, that the audience wants honesty. They've never wanted it more. How do you reconcile that with, you know, the other great arm of radio, of talk radio is political talk radio. And we're in an age where misinformation, disinformation, outright lying, altering, slanting is not just done. It's a practice in a lot of political talk radio. How do you reconcile that in sports talk radio where you think people want honesty and in other arms of this business, they apparently don't?
Let me tell you, this is what I always, when I talk, go talk to high school kids or talk to people who are thinking about getting in the business. And this is the same way you, in my opinion, you write a thesis statement as well. Take the most obvious answer and go completely opposite of it and then research that. If somebody tells you this is red, go, really? What's the opposite of red? Well, probably green. Let me go look at green and see if this is really green. That's basic, obviously. That's Taming of the Shrew, but still, it's very basic. What you need to do is make sure that what people are telling you is right. It's so simple. The problem is that if you don't research it enough, or you don't know where to look, you don't know the right people to ask, that you can get sucked into making major mistakes in the business. It's harder now than it ever been before. And it's easier for people to research you than it's ever been before. But in my opinion, always, and people say this to me all the time, they'll go, oh, you just took the opposite side of that topic. I'm like, no, that's how I felt about that particular topic. And so I didn't take the popular opinion. Sometimes I fall on the side of the popular opinion, but I'm always gonna try to look at the opposite of it. I'm always gonna try to figure out how this should have been, or maybe I didn't see this right. Let me look over here. And then when I look at that, I go, okay, they made a point. Or I'm like, oh, well, they didn't make a point. But the whole thing with the vaccine, that was difficult in a lot of people. In sports talk, people say, well, leave the politics out of it. Well, getting the vaccine and testing positive hurts your team. It hurts you as a player. There's nothing more important in sports right now than the vaccine issue, right? People will go, well, you shouldn't be talking about that. That's ridiculous. We have to. You have to be able to talk about the fact that a guy like Carson Wentz or a guy like Aaron Rodgers or before he's out of the playoffs, Kirk Cousins could miss a playoff game because they chose not to get vaccinated. That's a sports topic, right? So you need to get deeper into it. You need to find out why didn't Aaron Rodgers decide to do it? You got to get his reasoning for it. What is the thing he's allergic to? All of those things. You have to become all of a sudden a scientist, right? You got to try to figure out exactly why these people are saying these things. And then make your decision based on it. I understand by listening to him what Aaron Rodgers' point is. I get his point. I don't have to agree with it. And I can say that. I can say, have your point. Do what you want to do. I get that. But you, in the end, could hurt your team. You could hurt people around you. You could hurt yourself. That's the bottom line. And then you're done. And then you let people at home, Twitter, email, call, make their decision. Then they call you. And then you talk about it. You know, we have a discussion because that's what sports talk used to be. It used to be a discussion before Twitter, before the direct way of attacking. You called the show and you gave your opinion and then the talk host gave it back. That's the way it used to be. That doesn't happen as much as it used to. But when it does, that's when it's really good, in my opinion.
So social media has certainly changed that. And I think just in following up on that, you know, politics has always been part of sports, whether we wanted to admit it or not. In fact, if you look at life in America, there is really, in my opinion, no better place than sports to have conversations about race, about socioeconomics, about celebrity, about almost any topic, because it's the arena, it's the place where we're all in this together. And you know, Black and white and Catholic and Protestant and Muslim and small town, big town, you know, you have a favorite team and so you share that. You have a favorite goal and so you share that. And this is the place where we should be talking about it. So mm-hmm. I always push back on that. In my classes, I say, this is where we're going to talk about it.
You know? It's a meritocracy too, right?
Right.
How many jobs do you have out there where the New Orleans Saints had a guy named Michael Lewis back in the 90s, called the beer guy. He was a beer truck driver. How many jobs where you could walk in and go run a 4.29 in front of the coaches and them say, well, let me give you a chance to play football, right? You earned it by basing on how fast you run. That's not the way it works in life the majority of the time. You could have the right degrees, you could have the right experience, but that hiring manager goes, well, we like you. You know, in sports, they're like, that guy can help us win. We're playing with him, right? And it always wasn't that way. William Neer couldn't play middle linebacker because he was Black until he did. You know, Doug Williams wasn't a good quarterback until he won, right? Because he was a Black quarterback. But nowadays, it's whoever can help us win. And so because of that, you have all these groups of people, poor kids, rich kids, Black kids, white kids. Right now, we are as diverse in the NFL as we will ever be, in my opinion. The most diverse we'll ever be. And because of that, every conversation we have, we're allowed to have all of these opinions in it. And it's great. It is really good. That's the part I love about sports talk. That's what I love about sports. Is that conversation is going to come down to one thing in the end, right? Who won and who lost? Who helped you win that game? Who helped you lose that game? That's your basic conversation at the end of everything.
And is the audience ready for that grand intellectual examination of sport?
Some want it and cry for it. You can't even imagine how many emails you get breaking down the analytics of something. Like everybody sends you an Excel sheet, right? An Excel sheet on, you know, Adrian Martinez not being successful at late in games and here are the numbers. And I mean, everybody is doing that. Get a dozen of them, right? Because everybody wants to know more about why things are happening and they want to get in that deep discussion about it. You're always going to have the people who are just going to call and be mad. You know, why would you say that about Scott Frost? He's from Nebraska. He won a national championship here. He's doing everything he can. That's all. You're always going to get that call. You're always going to get that email. But on the other hand, there's 12 people who are going, no, this isn't working. Why isn't this working? Show me the numbers. Tell me why this isn't working right. And I think that's the majority of your listening audience. They want to hear that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And there's one thing I learned in sports radio many, many years ago from a program director whom I have great respect for, Bob Agnew, who he always said, it's not about the callers, it's about the listeners.
Oh, yeah.
Period.
No doubt. Yeah. You know? That's the only reason we're there. It's the same as news. I tell the kids again, the number first thing I say to all of them is you have one job. It's to serve the public interest. You're not allowed to go in a locker room. You're not allowed. You can go to city council meeting. You're not going to go every Monday. You're not going to go to school board every Tuesday. That's our job. Our job is to serve the public interest. What are you interested in? We're going to give you that. Not everybody's going to be interested in. Somebody's going to be mad you're covering it. But we're serving the public interest, good or bad. That is our only job, whether it's news or sports.
Well, I'm curious, more than a little curious, to see what your next chapter is, Michael. I could spend a Bill Simmons 90 minutes worth of talking with this stuff about you. I appreciate it with you.
No problem.
About this stuff, because I think it's important that people understand how and why we do this and understand, you know, how a radio show works. I think it would help their enjoyment or maybe decide they don't want to do that. But I think it's important that we talk about how these things happen. And I appreciate your willingness to share some time with us.
Yeah. I want to say that this next generation of kids who are coming up and doing this, the girls and the boys that are doing this now, have such an incredible advantage over what we had. These are 14, 15, 16 year old kids that are doing all this stuff already. And by the time they get to college and they get to get in your class and everything, they have all this experience. And then they learn there and they work with the best equipment ever. They're not kicking 1-inch tape, trying to get it to make it work. They're not cutting on carts. They're not doing all that stuff. They have, and so the next generation who comes out will be so much farther ahead. Now, will they think like we did because of the things that we went through? I don't know. But in terms of the pure doing the job, they are so far ahead of what we could have ever been.
Yeah, and exposure to media and trial and error. And mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I'm older than you are. I started shooting 16 millimeter film in Daily News. That is not the best way to do Daily News.
No, right, right.
Millimeter
right.
film, right? And then yep. we went to these luggy big old videotape cameras and these big boxes we carried around on our shoulders.
Ikigamis, yeah.
And now we can go out and do quality, you know, Hollywood cinema quality video on our phones. It's awesome.
Last thing I always tell the kids, I say, you know how I found out that Tupac died? And they're like, no, how'd you find out? I said, the AP wire went off. And I walked over and I ripped it and I read it. It wasn't on a tweet. It wasn't on the news yet. It was AP wire. You know what we don't have anymore? We don't have that machine sending us UPI and AP where I can go rip it and find out something that happened. It's one of the biggest changes there is, but it shows you where 20 years ago it was like and what it is now.
Okay. All right. Last thing on that. And I'm not trying to top you on this, but I was a summer intern in television in Kearney, Nebraska. And you know, they used to have these little kind of like aisleways, almost closet likes where these AP wires were. And we had the AP wire and the UPI wire.
Yeah.
That's how long ago it was.
Yeah.
And I hear this ding, 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 ding. These bells are just going off like there's a fire alarm or something. And I walked through that. I was the closest one. I walked through there. And in bold letters, it says, Elvis is dead.
Dead.
Mm. Boom. That was it.
Yeah.
1977. And of course we interrupted the,
yeah,
it was 1977. We interrupted the whatever shows were on. The anchor guy put his tie and ran in there. I mean, that was it. Right. And now
I was 8 years old in my aunt's basement. I remember it like it was yesterday.
I do too. I remember it like it was yesterday.
Alarm going off. Yeah. On the radio. Yeah. Remember when the radio would actually send the signal and we didn't worry about it being like the end of the world. It was just, obviously it was a news bulletin, you know? Yeah.
We see the jokes on Saturday Night Live, you know, they go ding, 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 breaking news. Well, that's what we did. Yeah, that's what we did.
That's what we got. Yeah. No doubt.
Hey, Michael, thanks. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Best of luck. And I know we'll talk soon. Thanks.
Thanks, John.
Michael Sevier, Omaha radio host, who also hosts the television show Big Red Wrap-Up on Nebraska Public Media. Sevier left his job at 1620 The Zone, where he was co-host of the morning drive time show. What's next? We'll see. I'm John Schrader, and this is Watch the Media.